Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, August 8th. Not a bad week, I think you'd agree, at least in the global financial markets as the rally off the March lows continues, the latest extension of which being the past 4 weeks, a period that has seen the S&P 500 roar ahead 15%. While Tokyo's Nikkei is up 12%, Frankfurt's DAX 19%, and the London FTSE up 15%. Strong stuff. And not just because things are less bad in the world. There are simply some solid signs the world economy has turned the corner. Though now we wait to see just how strong a recovery we get. I'm in the camp that believes the second half of the year's data will be good. But I still can't get a handle on 2010, and with so much uncertainty in the world, first and foremost being what to do with Iran, you can't get too euphoric. Then again, after the experience of 2008 and early 2009, I can't imagine too many are really that giddy just because their 401k has recovered a portion of its losses. I certainly also wouldn't blame anyone who wanted to book some profits at this point. But just a few notes on the real world. Start with China, where the government is increasingly concerned that its loose fiscal policy is leading to another round of bubbles, particularly in real estate, rather than money being lent for more sustainable and needed projects. China is looking for GDP growth in the third quarter of 9% and 9.8% in Q4, but the central bank has told the heads of the largest state-controlled financial institutions to cool it on the lending end. In the UK, two readings on manufacturing industrial production showed actual growth for June and July, not just a slowing pace of contraction. And the evidence is pretty clear the property market has bottomed there. But here, the Bank of England felt compelled to increase its level of quantitative easing, similar to our Federal Reserve's moves to limit any rise in interest rates, because the B of E is concerned the recovery will be weak, and there is a risk of a double dip. Germany also saw June industrial production come in far better than expected, up a super 4.5%, and then exports for the month soared 7%. But many here are talking of a V-shaped recovery, so look at Britain and Germany. Actual growth in manufacturing, and Europe was supposed to be the sick child. In India, its reading on July manufacturing is 55.3, still solidly in growth mode. But I do have to note on the inflation front that the Eurozone saw producer prices crater 6.6% in June, while wages in Japan were down 7% that month versus a year earlier. So, what of the US of A? There were a number of releases this week, with a few exceptions. Personal income, or one small exception, personal income. All the data points came in better than expected. June construction spending up 0.3% when a decline was forecast. The July ISM on manufacturing, 48.9, 46.5 expected. June consumption up 0.4%. June factory orders up 0.4% when a decline was forecast. The July ISM reading on the service sector, 46.4, which was actually a second slight disappointment. And then Friday's big kahuna, the July jobs report, came in with a loss of 247,000, again, better than expected, and the unemployment rate actually ticked down to 9.4%. I'm on record as saying we won't see 10% in that data point. One of the downers was with the retailers, who came out with same-store sales figures for July, and the 30 major chains were down an average 5.1%. But by Friday, after the better employment data, the shares were rallying anew. And Cisco's John Chambers offered that his critical company saw, quote, positive signs, and that it increasingly appeared we had reached a, quote, tipping point in the economy. Even as Cisco reported revenues for its most recent quarter that were down 18% versus a year ago. I view Cisco's report more positively than the street did. Then you have this cash for clunkers program for the auto sector. I just have a word for my fellow Republicans, many of whom want to criticize it. Talk about a bunch of hypocrites. Some of you are the same folks who have been praising the targeted, directed Chinese stimulus because it went after specific industries and it's worked there. So how can you then criticize a program targeting the auto sector, my friends? Come on. Then you have the unimaginative, unoriginal jerks on the air who say, well, I need a new golf driver. Where's my cash for drivers program? And they think they're being funny. Look, I don't want to see the deficits driven up any more than the next guy. I'm the one who years ago was calling it the crime of the century that we Americans put up with seeing $250 billion going to pay interest on the debt, a figure that is today far, far higher. But you'd have to be an ostrich with their head in the sand not to recognize that last spring we needed a stimulus program of some sort, only the Obama plan that emerged was duly criticized because it didn't do just that, and way too much of the $787 billion is going towards ill-conceived or ill-timed programs. Cash for clunkers, though, at least generated immediate action, and it's action, folks, that helps stimulate confidence, which in turn is almost inevitably self-reinforcing. Yes, I know, cash for clunkers is in some form taking from future sales. So be it. We're hoping that by that time the economy is in a decent enough recovery with some renewed job growth and a new class of buyers re-enters the car market at that point. But in the end, real growth does remain dependent on two factors, housing and jobs. We've seen signs real estate is bottoming, at least on the lower end, but actual job growth is a ways off. Speaking of housing, though, many of you saw a Reuters story by Al Yoon with the title, About Half of U.S. Mortgages Seen Underwater by 2011. Mr. Yoon writes, the percentage of U.S. homeowners who owe more than their house is worth will nearly double to 48% in 2011 from 26% at the end of March, portending another blow to the housing market, Deutsche Bank said on Wednesday. Home prices will have their biggest impact on prime conforming loans that meet underwriting and size guidelines of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the bank said in a report. Prime conforming loans make up two-thirds of mortgages and are typically less risky because of stringent requirements. We project the next phase of the housing decline will have a far greater impact on prime borrowers, Deutsche analysts Kim Weaver and Ying Shen said in the report. Close quote. Now, it's important to note that this analysis will not be accurate if the equity market can hold up and drag confidence and eventually job growth with it. I am well aware of the problems at the higher end. My office being in one of the wealthier communities in the country and my home is next door. The New York metropolitan region, for example, had been the last market to crack. But if Wall Street stabilizes and profitability is obviously returning, then so will housing values. Just a few other notes. I am always uneasy when our leaders do victory laps of any sort, as Barack Obama did on Friday with regards to the employment data. Recall there was a certain Republican president by the name of Bush who donned a flight jacket as he then declared victory in Iraq about 5 years too soon. All of our leaders are subject to such hubris. And so a brief thought on Iran. You talk about a hotspot and a potential game changer. This is it. Yet I never hear a single Wall Street strategist bring it up. Only the energy analysts do, for obvious reasons. We could be whistling a fairly happy tune come, say, November, when, bam, Israel attacks and Iran unleashes its furies. That would be the last thing our fragile psyches could take just before the Christmas shopping season, which will be a relative downer to begin with. Again, it's all about confidence and sentiment as I constantly look to see what can change it. The other item on the radar screen is, of course, H1N1, and as predicted, NBC was among the networks that had a slew of reports this week, though when one gleans the news from around the world, it wasn't all bad. The UK, for one, said that the latest wave had peaked, while in the US the government is issuing guidelines for schools to alleviate as much unnecessary panic as possible. This is good. The only problem is a second wave could hit in September, before vaccine production can catch up to demand, but at least the media has been acting responsibly of late. Turning to Wall Street, I was watching the Sunday morning talk shows last week, and it was pretty clear to me that the week was going to be a positive one, barring a disaster in Friday's unemployment data, as Larry Summers, Tim Geithner, and Alan Greenspan all had positive things to say about the economy. Greenspan noting he had, quote, seen significant improvement in the financial system. And later, Goldman Sachs' Abby Joseph Cohen talked of her firm's outlook for 2010, as in earnings for the S&P 500 are projected to be in the $75 area. Ergo, at 11.50 on the S&P, that would be a price-earnings multiple of 15, certainly historically reasonable. Today, the S&P resides at 10.10, its highest level since early October, and up 49% from its March closing low. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you on Saturday, August 15th. For more details, check out stocksandnews.com. Thank you.